I hope you're having a great Friday and that you're looking forward to a great weekend. Make sure that that weekend includes some time spent at your home congregation, worshiping, fellowshipping, praising, praying, serving, soaking up the Word of God, encouraging each other to love and good deeds, just like supposed to happen at a church. Now, if you don't have a home church, you need to find one. And if you happen to be looking for one right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East Church building, we invite you to come over and check us out. In fact, this particular weekend, which when this program is aired, is going to be the 22nd of March 2026, it's our kickoff to the holy days of spring. We always start the Sunday before Palm Sunday with Let the Little Children Come to Jesus Sunday. And we retell the story of Jesus and the little children. We pray over the kids that are in attendance and the families of those kids. And this year we're going to be having a carry-in dinner as well. So if you'd love to come, come and join us. We'd love to have you. Let's go ahead and open our Bibles. I believe I want to start in 1 Kings 15 first, but we're going to immediately jump over to 2 Chronicles 13. The timing is right around, on my chronology, 924 BC. Verse number 1 of 1 Kings 15 says, "Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam," that's the guy up in the north, northern kingdom, the son of Nebat, "Abiyam began to reign over Judah." Now, he's the son of Rehoboam, and therefore the grandson of King Solomon. So we're not very far past the peak of the Solomonic kingdom, the Solomonic Empire. Now, here he's called Abiyam. In 2 Chronicles, he's called Abiyah. What's the difference between those two? Well, Abiyam means my father is the sea, or my father is over the sea, or something like that. Abiyah means my father is Yah, the divine name of God. So why there's a difference between the two, we're not sure. Remember, one of the problematic things to copy accurately are proper names, spelling. But the reason I wanted to start in 1 Kings was because of this. Verse 2, "He reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Ma'akah, the daughter of Abishulam." So we're going to see a variation over in 2 Chronicles at this point. 2 Chronicles 13:1 says, "In the 18th year of King Jeroboam, Abiyah began to reign over Judah. He reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah." So again, in the original text, everything was inspired by God, but we've had hand copies done since then many times. So sometimes we get a little bit of variations, and it shows up in different different manuscripts, and so we have to kind of figure out which one was the original. I believe that the Chronicles passage has the correct name of Abiyah. I also believe it has the correct name for his mom and grandfather on his mom's side. Now, back to 1 Kings 15:3. Listen to this. "He walked in all the sins that his father did before him, and his heart was not wholly true to he who is his God as the heart of David his father." So what we find in the 1 Kings passage is that this guy is not a good guy. He is not a devoted follower of the one true God. He's much more like his father, Rehoboam, who was a rather self-centered, crude, and mean man. The reason you need to know that is because he is portrayed in 2 Chronicles as if he's standing up for the true faith, which is not the case. We'll understand that he's actually using the faith as a means to an end, that he's using it as a way to win political points and to win the hearts and the minds of his soldiers. Nothing new in that, is it? People very often, as politicians, play the religion card to their own benefit, even though they themselves have no deep and abiding faith. It's very frustrating to me as a preacher, but I've seen it a lot in my own lifetime, and I know a lot of it in historical periods. Now let's go to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 13:2 says this: Now there was war between Abiah and Jeroboam. So we've got these border skirmishes that are going on just north of Jerusalem, just a mile or two, is where the border's located. And so we've got these constant border skirmishes. But Abiah, as soon as he comes to power, makes a major thrust across that border. Here it is, verse 3. Abiah went out to battle, having an army of valiant men of war, 400 chosen men. So he's got 400 militia members, army members coming up from the south. These people are from the tribe of Judah, from the tribe of Simeon that's associated with the tribe of Judah. We've talked about the idea that at least a very small portion of Benjamin seems to be tied in with the city of Jerusalem, because it's the city of Jerusalem sits in a little notch between Judah and Benjamin. And we've also got some Israelis that immigrated out of the northern tribes as soon as Jeroboam took over. And so Abiah is drawing from all those people, and he's got himself an army of 400,000. Now, on the north side, Jeroboam drew up his line of battle against him with 800,000 chosen warriors. So Jeroboam has the larger army because he has the more population to draw people out of. He ended up with 10 tribes, while Rehoboam ended up with 2 tribes. Then we have the battle lines taking place on this particular fight. Verse 4, Then Abiah stood up on Mount Zemaraim, that is in the hill country of Ephraim, which is not very far north of the border. And he said, Hear me, O Jeroboam and all Israel. Ought you not to know that he who is God of Israel gave the kingship over Israel forever to David and his sons by a covenant of salt? So this is where I told you we needed to understand that Abiah is, he's using religion as a tool. He doesn't really believe deeply in the true and living God. He's just weaponizing it. He's also weaponizing the idea that the Davidic dynasty was given by this God to Israel perpetually, a covenant of salt. Salt was exchanged in certain business deals, and so it was used as an example of, we cut a deal. And so basically God made a deal, and we're still under that deal. Continuing with his words, verse 6. Yet Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, a servant of Solomon, the son of David, rose up and rebelled against his Lord, and certain worthless scoundrels gathered about him and defied Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when Rehoboam was young and irresolute and could not withstand them. Now that's kind of manipulating historical facts. Of course, to his own benefit, you may remember that Rehoboam was approached by Jeroboam, who was kind of the leader of the Israeli tribes, petitioning for a release from some of the problems that they'd been under working for King Solomon. They just wanted a little less taxes, a little bit less severity in what the king wanted from them on their work gangs. And Rehoboam was very rude back to them and said, "Nah, you ain't seen nothing yet, bud. It's going to be even tougher." And because of that, the northern tribes withdrew from United Israel and said that they were going to make their own kingdom. So Rehoboam was a very large component, his attitude, a very large component in the split. It wasn't just northern tribes deciding to take advantage of his youth, which he was 41, and making this rebellion against them. Back to his comments, verse 8. "And now you think to withstand the kingdom of he who is in the hand of the sons of David, because you have a great multitude and have with you the golden calves that Jeroboam made you for gods?" Now, that's true. Jeroboam did make the golden calves. One he put at Bethel, just a few miles north of the border. The other he put up at Dan, way up at the north section of the tribes of northern Israel. These two calves were supposed to represent Yahweh, he who is. It was an Egyptian sort of tie-in. But it was wrong. It was idolatry, and Jeroboam did this to try to get the people not to go to Jerusalem, which is the place where God caused his name to dwell. So they were definitely on the wrong in that. But the way that Abiya is using this, he's using it as a weapon to say, how dare you think that you can withstand God's kingdom and God's kings. Verse number 9. "Have you not driven out the priests of he who is, the sons of Aaron and the Levites, and have made priests for yourselves like the peoples of other lands?" Absolutely. That is definitely what happened, and it was totally wrong. That's why a lot of those northern Israelis migrated south along with the priests and the Levites that had been living in their tribal regions. "Whoever comes for ordination with a young bull or seven rams becomes a priest of what are not gods." And again, probably some truth to that, that anybody that could meet the minimum standards of Jeroboam could become a priest of his golden calf idols. Verse 10. "But as for us, he who is our God. We've not forsaken him." Now keep in mind again, according to the 1 Kings passage, Abiya is not on board with a true heartfelt faith with Yahweh, with he who is. So he's simply playing a part here to weaponize religion. "We have priests ministering to he who is, who are sons of Aaron, and Levites for their service." So again, that's legitimate. That's the way it's supposed to be. "They offer to he who is every morning and every evening burnt offerings and incense of sweet spices. They set out the showbread on the table of pure gold and care for the golden lampstand that its lamps may burn every evening." So they're following all of the appropriate God-given, Bible-sanctioned worship rituals. "For we keep the charge of he who is our God, but you forsaken him. Behold, God is with us at our head, and our priests with their battle trumpets to sound the call of battle against you. Oh, sons of Israel, do not fight against he who is the God of your fathers, for you cannot succeed." So that was basically what he wanted to get to, is God's on our side, you guys are the rebels, you need to surrender and come back under my kingdom. That's the point. Abiya wants to assert his right to be over not just the southern tribes of Judah, but over the northern tribes of Israel. Verse 13. "Meanwhile, Jeroboam had set an ambush around to come upon them from behind. So while Abia is making his speech, Jeroboam is trying to wrap around behind him with an ambush force. And thus his troops were in front of Judah, and the ambush was behind them. And when Judah looked, behold, the battle was in front and behind them. So now the battle is engaged. They cried to He Who Is. The priests blew the trumpets. And then the men of Judah raised the battle shout. And when Judah shouted, God defeated Jeroboam and all the Israel before Abia and Judah. So God gives the battle to the southern kingdom. Now, they are smaller in number. They got about half the military force in this battle. But God gives them this victory because northern tribes are definitely in the wrong here. Now, again, I've already said that Abia has got his own problems. But that doesn't fit into the equation here as to why God gives the victory to his people in the southern kingdom who are sincere. Verse number 16. The men of Israel fled before Judah, and God gave them into their hand. Abia and his people struck them with great force, so there fell slain of Israel 500,000 chosen men. Think about that. More than 50% casualties from the northern Israeli forces. That is going to be really tough on them in the coming few years because these are people that when they're not fighting in the militia, they're at home doing work, being with their wives, being with their kids. And now those guys are gone. They're dead. Verse 18, thus the men of Israel were subdued at that time, and the men of Judah prevailed because they, specifically the soldiers, I think, not Abia, relied on He Who Is the God of their fathers. And then Abia pursued Jeroboam and took cities from him, specifically Bethel with its villages, which is interesting. Bethel is where one of the golden calves is located. And so Abia takes it over. Presumably, although we don't know for sure, he would have destroyed the golden calf if it hadn't been evacuated by the northern tribal people when they ran away from the town. So this puts a dent in the southern worship area for the northern tribes of Israel. And also Jeshana with its villages, and Ephron with its villages. So some more of the cities that were in this border region north of Jerusalem, just a few miles. So by the time this fight is over, the border has moved all the way to the north end of the Benjamite tribal region. And so Benjamin pretty much becomes part of the southern kingdom at this point in our story. Verse 20, Jeroboam did not recover his power in the days of Abia. So he's only got a few more years left in his kingdom, but definitely he doesn't get enough oomph back to take back any of these border cities during the rest of Abijah's time. But it says, He Who Is struck him down and he died. Now that's the Jeroboam story that we're not got to. We'll get to that. But keep in mind here that it says that God is the one that strikes Jeroboam down. You might remember that he was given a prophecy through his wife that all the men in his family would die either in the city and be eaten by dogs or die in the country and be eaten by scavenger birds. They would not be brought intact into a tomb. And so this verse, verse 20 in 2 Chronicles 13, getting ahead of the story a little bit, seems to indicate that Jeroboam is struck down somewhere and suffers that fate. But let's finish the story of Abiah, because he doesn't stay on the throne very long after this battle. But Abiah grew mighty. He took 14 wives and had 22 sons and 16 daughters. So again, we see this deviation from God's intention of one man, one woman for a lifetime. A violation of God's instructions through the prophet Moses that kings, when Israel eventually had them, were not to multiply to themselves chariots, horses, or wives, because wives were basically taken in great numbers by kings of the ancient world as political power. And God didn't want the Israelis to function in that fashion. So he's got a lot of kids. Verse 22, the rest of the acts of Abiah, his ways and his sayings, are written in the story of the prophet Iddo. Little reminder, we've got multiple contributors to the book of 1 Kings and the book of 2 Chronicles. So probably the prophet Iddo was the one writing over in 1 Kings that told us that Abiah was not a good guy, that he did things wrong in the few years that he led. Chapter number, well, let's see, where do I want to go? Let's continue in 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 14, verse 1. Abiah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, reigned in his place. In his days, the land had rest for 10 years. So we get a new king in southern Judah who is a much better guy than his father or his grandfather. And we find out that he gets a 10-year period of peace during his reign. Not yet. We'll get to that. So he becomes king. Let me check my records here. According to my chronology, in 922 BC. Verse 2 of 2 Chronicles says, Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of he who is his God. And then we get a little bit ahead of our story, but I'm going to read it anyway. He took away the foreign altars and the high places and broke down the pillars and cut down the Asherim and commanded Judah to seek he who is the God of their fathers and to keep the law and the commandment. So he basically becomes a revivalist king. He does not want to continue in the path of father Abiah or grandfather Rehoboam. He wants to be much more like David and also like Solomon in their best years. And so he's a good man, and we need to appreciate the things that he does. Before we move on with any more of his story, we have to go back and finish the story of King Jeroboam up in northern Israel. Okay, so 1 Kings chapter 14, verse number 19 is where we pick his story back up. I warned you that we have to bounce around a little bit here because we've got two kingdoms now that we're going to be following. And in order for us to have our chronology, we have to bounce a little bit in some of our stories. So 1 Kings chapter 14, verse 19. Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam, how he warred, how he reigned, behold, they're written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel. The time that Jeroboam reigned was 22 years, and then he slept with his fathers, and Nadab his son reigned in his place. So that happens in 920 B.C. There's no details about his death. My suspicion is that it was not a pleasant one, and that once his body gave up the ghost, it was either chewed on by dogs or it was chewed on by scavenger birds before it was finally collected up and put in a tomb, because that was the prophecy of how things would happen when he and other men in his family tree would die. Jump ahead to chapter 15, verse number 25 this time, because we have to talk about this new king of northern Israel. His name is Nadab. Verse 22, verse 25 of 1 Kings 15. Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah, and he reigned over Israel 2 years. So we already know he's not going to be around very long. Why? Verse 26, he did what was evil in the sight of He Who Is, and he walked in the way of his father and in his sin, which he made Israel to sin. And that's usually a reference to the two golden calves and the idols that were also associated with this new faith in the northern tribes. We'll wrap up with this one last bit of the story to get ready for next time. Verse 27, Baasha, the son of Ahiyah of the house of Issachar, conspired against him. So this guy is bad enough that one of his own subjects, a man from the tribe of Issachar, says, well, this is enough of this. We have got to get rid of this guy. He is horrible. And so he goes to where Baasha is and assassinates him.